A thought is not just something that's fleeting. If you have that same repetitive thought, especially if it's a negative one, it really impacts how you feel about yourself and your life. So what makes a life or a day fulfilled, fully lived or not, isn't so much about what we do, but how we feel about what we do. Welcome to Spiritually Hungry Summertime
Snacks
Edition.
Snacks.
We came up with something else. Bites.
Bites. Berg bites.
Morsels. Snippets.
Snacks.
So we talk about this a lot, but that everything really comes down to our thoughts. And Jonathan Swift penned, "May you live every day of your life." And I always loved that. It's a very simple sentiment, but it packs a punch because it makes you stop and ask yourself the question, am I living every day of my life? And for some, I think it might make them think about or reconsider, you know, their relationship, their job, where they live, you know, might I be happier somewhere else, or if these things kind of changed. For me, it's more than just mindfulness. It really makes me stop and think, well, not just about how I live my life, but how I experience my life, right?
When you said that, that's exactly the thought that I had, right? Living your life isn't so much even accomplishments, right? It's just how you experience every moment.
Right. You could have a very prestigious title, a lucrative career, the house that you want, and then it can feel like a prison, right? And it really just comes down to your experience of it. Because also, we can go through life and accumulate a lot of things that we think we would want that would make us happy. We get there, and then we end up being derailed and go down a very different path. And we probably aren't living every day of our lives. Well,
I would say certainly none of us live every moment of our lives, right? Because, like you said, when you use the word prison, I think what's worse, hard to say better or worse, about prison's pretty bad, and you know, feeling bad is bad, but not feeling the I would say excitement in every moment of life is probably the worst part, right? Because everybody has happy moments, sad moments, challenging moments, and exhilarating moments, but the question is, you know, what's happening in between? Are you able? And to my mind, and I'd like to hear what you have to share, a lot of it comes down to gratitude, right? If you're able to really appreciate, I'm alive in this second, I have a family this second, I have a partner this, whatever, right? That, I think, I would venture to say there's not any one person in the world who lives that 100% of the time, but I think the purpose of spiritual study and work is to increase those moments of living.
And that's why part of answering that question is, am I living my life in a meaningful way? Because giving back and having a sense of purpose and feeling appreciation and gratitude is that circuitry which allows you to certainly live more of the days of your life than you would not if you didn't participate in those things. Funnily enough, we were listening to 10% Happier yesterday. I love his podcast. And he had Ted Danson on, which is interesting, you know, because most people just know him from Cheers and that character and persona, but he calls himself a joy junkie. And, you know, I call myself a change junkie. And I was thinking, well, joy sounds much better. I think I'm tired of the hard change thing. No, just kidding. But, and his whole thing was, it comes down to appreciation, right? That's really how you get your joy on. So I want to ask our listeners just to consider these questions, because I think they're really going to be able to help each of us shine a light on how we are experiencing our lives.
And just before you say that, I'd like to add that I think maybe something that not all of our listeners accept is a very fundamental spiritual truth, that we are here in this world to live every moment, which means that we are capable and actually meant to be living every moment with excitement, or at least the majority of our moments with excitement, which is, I would say, actually living.
I'm going to get into what I think about days in a little bit later, but I think that part of it is that, and it's normal, it's human nature to think that we have forever. And we know we certainly don't, right? If you ask anybody logically, do you think you're going to live forever? You'd say no. But the way we spend our time is as if we have forever. So nothing really, the most important things aren't usually the things we give attention to. They're not the things that are most immediate and urgent. The things that demand our attention are people who upset us, or our insecurities that we feel like we need to fulfill and make ourselves feel whole. Like, we go on this other thing and we spend a lot of time there thinking that the important parts, you know, we'll catch up to.
Exactly.
Why do you keep smiling at me as I'm saying that?
A very deep spiritual sentence.
Go ahead.
But I don't want to live forever. I just want to live when I'm alive.
John Bon Jovi.
There you go.
It's my life. Okay, so let's ask our listeners, how do you feel most of the time? And I'll give you some adjectives. Is it bored, inspired, sad, tired, hopeful, focused, worried, content, anxious? That's probably a lot. It's probably all of those things on any given day. But I want you to think about the one that comes up most for you. So I'll say it a little slower. Bored, inspired, sad, tired, hopeful, focused, worried, content, anxious. And after you write that down, I want you to think about what is your predominant emotion most days, right? So the main one. The second question is, what is the primary thought?
I have a question.
What?
Is it before you've had your morning coffee or after you've had your morning coffee? That was kind of a joke.
Uh-huh. Now I'm thinking about it for myself. I always try to, before I get out of bed even, I put my hand on my heart and on my my other hand on my stomach, and I close my eyes again, and I thank God that I woke up and that my body is here and like all of the good things, and then I get up and then I run to the coffee. No. The second question is, what is the primary thought that drives your predominant emotion, right? Because everything is a thought. So what thought, if the emotion you chose was, let's say most days is anxious, what is the thought, if you can catch it? Because that's going to be a real indicator. I love this question too. What is your internal narrative most days? Is it, I have to do X, Y, and Z, or I get to do X, Y, and Z? Is it, I am stressed about, fill in the blank, or I am excited about? Because those are the same, very similar energy. Stress and excitement, they have that same kind of vibration. It just depends on your mindset and what is driving it. The next narrative, is it, they expect me to do versus I want to do? Because that will indicate if you're living your life based on external responses. And the last question in that is, do you feel your daily routine is purpose-driven or chore-driven? So all of these things obviously will help you understand why you feel the way you do. And also then it leads to how we spend our time, because most people spend a lot of time thinking about the big decisions in life. Should I do this or should I do that? What's the right thing? Because whatever I decide on this big decision is going to impact the next 10, 15, 20 years of my life. But really, our life is made up of a series of small decisions day in and day out, right? Really small things that eventually lead to big things. So an average, a person has between 12,000 to 60,000 thoughts a day. It's a lot of thoughts. What I find really interesting, though, 80% of our thoughts are negative. This every person, this is proven. And 95% of our thoughts are repetitive. So we'd be remiss if we didn't pause and say, okay, what are the primary thoughts that I have each and every day? Again, realizing that 80%, just as we are wired, are negative, 95% are repetitive. So if you already start to just decipher and pick and choose the ones that don't serve you, you're going to change the way that you live your life, and more importantly, the way you experience your life in each day. That's according to the National Science Foundation, that average of the thoughts we have a day per day, as well as the percentage.
But I think you're saying something really important, is that most of us aren't actively thinking about our thoughts, and most of us are not actively editing our thoughts, because they are so both repetitive and there. And what you're suggesting to our listeners is to really take the time to account for your daily thoughts and find a way to edit, which is not going to be an easy job, right? Because I think our default subconscious will lead us to have these constant thoughts, and as you said, so many of the negative. And this work is not to suggest it's going to be easy, meaning, oh, I just realized I had an anxious thought because of something that somebody said or did, or a thought that I have. Oh, let me delete that, right? It's not that easy. You probably have to do that, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 times
throughout the day
to the same thought. before it actually is deleted from your bank of repetitive thoughts.
Right. And when we entertain a thought, let's say it's a negative thought, but it doesn't really impact us, but we allow it to stay there, that thought grows and it grows and then it grows roots. And then it becomes a thought that then becomes a belief and then becomes a characteristic of yours. So a thought is not just something that's fleeting. If you have that same repetitive thought, especially if it's a negative one, it really impacts how you feel about yourself and your life. So what makes a life or a day fulfilled, fully lived or not, isn't so much about what we do, but how we feel about what we do.
Right. And that's driven by our thoughts.
Exactly.
Right? One of the reasons I think it's so important to spend, I would say, a significant amount of one's day in study, in spiritual study, and or meditation / prayer, whichever one chooses, is because at least you know those, whatever, call it an hour, 2 hours, whatever that amount of time is, hopefully those are not times that are allowing the negative repetitive thoughts, because you're filling your mind with something so much brighter and lighter, L-I-G-H-T, that I think it's one of the tools that one can powerfully use to begin this editing thought process.
So important, because what you've done now is you've quieted the noise, that negative noise, that external, and you're basically implanting something in your mind that wasn't there before. And then when you feel good about something that you've studied or learned that's enlightening, or you have an aha moment, then that can lead to different thoughts that then you'll have about yourself. I also want to touch upon this idea that Kabbalistically, we know that the energy of each day is unique to each day. And I think often when people, let's say they've had a lot of negative thoughts in that day, they write the day off, right? I can't wait for this day to end, or, you know, I can't wait to go home. And I just wish I could go under the bed, under the covers again, or I can't wait till happy hour comes, or whatever our way is, or I just want to binge watch TV or eat a pint of ice cream or whatever your go-to is. But instead, and by the way, the energy in this day is unique to this day. Tomorrow we'll have a different energy and you won't have the same opportunity. You'll have different opportunities, but writing days off is how we experience less of our life. Also, we basically have less days to live. So we talked about thoughts, and related to that, then our thoughts affect our perspective, or perhaps it's our perception of what we are experiencing. Kabbalist Rav Ashlag talks about the only difference between someone who is incredibly fulfilled versus unfulfilled is their ability to see. And it's a paradox of sight, right? I see. Oh, I see. It's really when you understand something differently. Do you say, I see, right? It's not something that now your eyes, something in front of you is different, but your understanding is different. So to see is a metaphor for comprehension, for discernment, for recognition, for realization, for an understanding. To really see is to be able to see beyond the illusion of this world. So it's beyond any biases we have about ourselves or titles we've given ourselves. It's to be able to fully see what's really real and to decipher between that illusionary world and how we fool ourselves. Because I think so often, I think it's so painful to see. And certainly I experience sometimes this, but I see it a lot in when we speak to our children or to students. It's that blinder that's on that you cannot see who you are or who you're meant to be. And you live with this in this illusionary world. And once in a while, it's taken off and like, oh, I see, right? But I think a lot of this starts with our thoughts. And if we're able to change those belief systems, which again, start with the negative thoughts and the way we label ourselves, that we're not smart enough, or we're not thin enough, or we're not successful enough, or whatever it is, we can get out of our way, we'll really be able to fully live our days.
Yeah.
Why do you keep smiling today? What's going on?
You make me happy. No, I was going to say as a joke that I'm not thin enough was not directed at me. That's what I was going to ask.
No, of course not. I don't call you slim for nothing.
This is a very important idea. And we would talk about, and this maybe a bigger topic than this, but right, that idea of opening the eyes, seeing the greater perspective, reminds me of this ancient parable that's used, right? That almost all of our problems come from either seeing ourselves or any situation in a narrow view. And that the more expansive, and this is really, again, the purpose of the spiritual study, is to expand our vision. Like you said, opening the eyes is the ability, rather than seeing a sliver of reality, seeing the totality of reality. Most of us probably aren't prepared for that, but at least a greater and greater vantage, a greater and greater view. It reminded me of this parable that is used about this simple man who doesn't know anything about farming, who has a friend who owns a piece of land, and he sees in one day on the piece of land, and he's digging up the land. And the guy says, if you like your land so much, why are you making all these burrowing, all these holes in this beautiful piece of land? He says, don't worry, you'll see. The next day he takes bags of seed, right? And starts throwing it onto the ground. And the guy says, you spent so much money on that seed. Why are you throwing it in the ground? He says, you'll see. And then he sees that he's covering up the seeds with dirt, and he says, now you're never going to be able to find it, right? And this goes on and on, and finally he sees wheat growing in the field, and then he sees the guy chopping it down. He says, all this time you grew this beautiful field, and now you're chopping it down. He says, you'll see. And this goes on, and then of course he takes the wheat and he goes through the whole process, then he makes a loaf of bread. At the end, the guy says, oh, now I realize that they weren't being stupid, you know, ruining your land, throwing away the seed, and so on and so forth. And that's really the problem that we have in life. Any pain that we have experienced is from the fact that we're seeing a sliver of reality. The more wide our vantage is, the more we understand, the more we see, the more we appreciate that everything has a purpose. Everything is part of that great story of our lives. And again, we don't see ourselves in that view. We don't see our lives in that view.
I love that parable. It's cute. I hadn't heard that one. Yeah. But not only do we only see a sliver, I just want to emphasize that the sliver we focus on is usually what is full of lack, right? We focus and we heighten those dark parts or the limiting parts of our thoughts about ourselves. And that's really the issue. It's kind of like, you know, I used to love this game and I tried to get the kids to play it still, but Rush Hour, you know, it's a little game and you have these little plastic cars and it's basically Rush Hour and the cars are gridlocked and you have this thing you're trying to figure out and there's different, you have to get the yellow car through without picking up any cars. So you have to have strategy, you have to look at it. But if you focus on that one car and you don't consider all the other pieces and all of the other cars, you're going to be stuck there, hopefully. And I think that's really how we live our lives. We are focused on that yellow car, right? Which you can call it the bucket of our problems or our sorrows or our woes or the not good enoughs or the false belief systems. And we just look at the car and we're like, oh, it's never going to get out of this. How are we going to get out of this gridlock? Whereas if you look at all the other beautiful parts of your life, and you start to play with those and move them around, that's really when your life becomes expansive and your days become fully lived.
Beautiful. So I think what you're suggesting to our listeners is to take this time in the summer to really think about your thoughts and find ways to edit them and gain a greater view of your life. And again, I think the underlying spiritual truth here is that you and I and every one of our listeners is meant to be experiencing our lives in a much greater sense of joy. And that's, first of all, for everybody to know it's possible, but second, that can only be accomplished by using the tools and the wisdom that you share with us today. So thank you, Monica, for that beautiful spiritually hungry snack for the summer.
Snack. And stay spiritually hungry. Well, you will, because you're only getting snacks.
Snacks. So. Snacks.